So, hello, my name is Ebony Love, and today is Wednesday, March 15, 2017, and I'm sitting here in Walker Hall interviewing as part of the SPOT 2017 cohort on the topic of African American and Latino histories here at the University of Florida. I want to first start off by thanking you for taking the time to interview with me and talk about the student population here. And if you don't mind, can you please introduce yourself by stating your name and your position here at UF?
All right, my name is Sharon Austin. I am the director of the African American Studies program and associate professor of political science here at UF.
Okay, so we're going to start with the easy questions. Mm-hmm. The first one is, when you think of your childhood, what is your fondest memory?
When I was a teenager, I had the opportunity to go away to a summer program for 6 weeks in Andover, Massachusetts at a prep school called Phillips Academy. Mm-hmm. It was probably one of the first times that I had interacted with students of different races, except for maybe with 3 years when I was bused in elementary school to a predominantly white neighborhood. But other than that, all of my schools were mostly always black. And it was the first time I had people of different races that I had befriended, and I really enjoyed the environment.
Okay. When you were talking about the summer program, did it have a name?
It was the called the Andover Summer Session.
Okay.
And the school was Phillips Academy in Andover, Massachusetts.
Okay. Where did you grow up and what was your home life like?
I grew up in Memphis, Tennessee, with my parents, my sister and brother. Our home life was, my parents were working class people. It was a working class community. It was a good place to grow up. There were a lot of young families raising children. I think the community, it felt really safe. I went to good schools. I had good friends, good teachers. So for the most part, it was a really good place to grow up.
Okay. Just really quick, how many siblings do you have and what were their names?
I have one brother, his name is Marvin, and one sister, her name is Janice.
Okay, and then your parents' names?
My parents are Willie Wright and Ruth Wright. Both my parents are deceased, though.
Okay. Something that you said really interested me, because a little bit later, I guess we can talk about segregation and desegregation here mm-hmm. at UF, but you talked about busing during your elementary school.
Right.
Where do you know the neighborhood that you were bused to and how that process happened?
It was from 4th through 6th grade. The neighborhood was called Oak Haven.
Mm-hmm.
The school was Oak Haven Elementary. This was during the mid-1970s. I had a school in my neighborhood that was within walking distance that I had attended, but from first through third grade. But by fourth grade, they wanted to integrate the schools. Memphis is a very racially polarized city.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was bused to Oak Haven, which was a predominantly white school in a predominantly white neighborhood. But the interesting thing about Memphis, then and now, once black people move into neighborhoods, white people move out.
Mm-hmm.
So even though it was a predominantly white neighborhood, it didn't stay a white neighborhood for long, because once more black kids started coming to the school and more black families started moving into the neighborhoods, white people moved out. And then white people took their kids out of school because they didn't want them in school with black kids. For the most part, the experience itself was fine at the school. I don't remember having any problems with my white classmates. I think, you know, as kids being that young, we didn't really care about race very much. So I don't recall having any really bad memories of it.
So then what was the difference between 6th and 7th grade?
In 6th grade, I was still at Oak Haven. And then 7th grade, I went back to a school in my community for junior high school, which was predominantly black. And within walking distance. So I was no longer bused in junior high and high school, but it was just for that 3-year time period when I was in elementary school.
Do you know if it was a funding issue or was it your parents or?
It was just, they just made the assignments. And I think by the late 1970s and early 1980s, people realized that busing didn't do any good, because by that time, the city of Memphis was so black,
mm-hmm.
That there weren't enough white areas to bus black kids into. I would say most of the white students that I went to college with in Memphis went to private schools, private predominantly white schools. And the reason probably that many of their parents put them in those schools was to keep them away from black kids.
Oh, okay.
So it was a very racially polarized community.
Okay. So staying on the topic of your elementary, middle, and high school years, when I think about my time here at UF and I think about my undergraduate career, I think that there is some experiences that I had through my K through 12 experience that kind of shaped how I came into UF. Mm-hmm. Can you think of any experience that you had in your K through 12 years that may have influenced either you choosing a college or mm-hmm. anything like that?
I think the experiences that I had from grades K through 6 were fine. I don't remember having any bad experiences in school, and I was always an honor student, and I had friends, so it was mm-hmm. fine. But by the time I reached junior high school, there was a lot of peer pressure. And one problem that we have in Black communities is Black kids have a tendency to think that if you're a good student, that you're acting white. And so I didn't really run into that very much in junior high school, but it was a big problem in high school. The kids were just vicious, and keep in mind, this was a school that was probably about 99% Black. And so the kids were just really vicious and hateful in the sense that if you were an honor student, they gave you a really hard time. It got to a point when I was a senior, I was valedictorian in my class, and my sister had been valedictorian the year before. The kids were so jealous that when you'd be walking down the hall to go from one class to the next, the halls would be really crowded because it was a crowded school. And the kids would just stand in the hall just watching the other kids, just finding things to say about them or trying to find ways to make jokes about them. And I could remember walking from my homeroom to like my first period class, my second period class, and there'd be kids just standing in the hall just waiting to insult you, just calling you all kinds of vulgar names. The teachers knew what was going on, but they didn't really do anything because they just felt like that's just the way it is here. So the teachers would go into their classrooms, like when the kids would be walking from class to class, and pretend they didn't see what was going on. But that was really vicious because it was the first time and one of the few times in my life that I've had Black people just being really, really hateful toward other Black people simply because, you know, you were a Black student who was trying to do something with your life. And we were all from mostly working class communities, so I couldn't figure out why they had a problem with kids trying to excel, trying to do something positive, but they did. But the good thing about that was that when I went to college, and for the first time when I really experienced blatant racism, it didn't bother me as much as it did some of the other Black kids because I had gone to through so much in high school with the Black kids that when I ran into problems with white kids, it didn't really faze me very much because it still wasn't as bad as what I had dealt with. What I had dealt with in high school. So it really made it so that I wasn't afraid to go to a white college because mm-hmm. I had dealt with so much with Black people. Going to a white college wasn't a problem. See you later, Trish.
Okay, I was just going to poke in. I didn't know if you were recording that. Take care.
All right, see you. Ebony went last year.
Yeah. Au revoir. Quick question. What was the racial makeup of your teachers and the people who worked at your high school?
The school was predominantly Black. I'd say the teachers were 50-50.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, so you mentioned that your sister was also the valedictorian of your high school.
Mm-hmm.
What is your family's educational history?
Mm-hmm.
For example, like both of my parents have bachelor's degrees,
mm-hmm.
and my brother just graduated from college, so we're all college educated.
Mm-hmm.
So how would you map your family's educational history? What is their philosophy like? How mm-hmm. is that?
My parents grew up in the Mississippi Delta. They grew up very poor.
Mm-hmm.
My father had a sixth grade education because my parents both grew up picking cotton. And so, you know, when we study sharecropping and segregation, that's the life my parents lived in that type of community in small town Mississippi. So they both had very difficult lives. So my dad had a sixth grade education because he had to drop out of school to help support his family. My mother had a high school education. She had attended college for a couple of years. She wanted to be a nurse, but she never did finish. This was during the early 60s when women were expected to get married. And so she quit school and got married and then was a homemaker raising her kids until she stayed at home until I was in the second grade when I was 7. So neither of my parents were really, you know, educated people, but both of them heavily emphasized education. And a lot of that was because of the way they had been raised in which they were denied opportunities. So they were very strict when it came to education. My sister has a bachelor's degree, a master's degree, and an educational specialist degree. She is now a principal at a charter school in Memphis. My brother has a bachelor's degree. He worked on his master's, but he didn't finish. His bachelor's is in communications and journalism, and he now works as the chief meteorologist at the CBS station in Indianapolis. He does the weather. So my brother and sister and I, all three of us are educated, and a lot of that was because of our parents and the influence of our parents.
Okay. So what exact university did you attend, and what is your undergraduate degree in?
I attended, it was called Christian Brothers College then, now it's called Christian Brothers University. My bachelor's degree is in history with a minor in political science.
Okay.
Yeah. I also attended and graduated from University of Memphis with a master's in political science, a minor in education, and University of Tennessee, Knoxville with a doctorate in political science.
Okay. That's amazing.
Yeah.
It's like all over.
Yeah.
Hopefully it can be you one day.
It will be.
So when you were in your undergraduate, we're focusing mainly on undergraduate for now. Were you involved in any student organizations or pre-professional groups?
The only student organization I was involved in was the Black Student Union.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have any Black organizations at my school. As a matter of fact, you know, students here take things for granted that you can get involved in all kinds of different organizations, whether it be based on something in your major or social activity or religious group or student government. But we didn't have very many opportunities like that at my school. It was mostly a commuter campus. It was a small private college that had less than 1,000 students. Out of those 1,000, I think about 25 of us were Black. So there weren't very many opportunities. Most of the students just went to class in the morning, and by 1 or 2 in the afternoon, the campus would pretty much be empty because everybody would go home.
Okay. When you think of your experiences in undergrad, did you have one mentor?
Mm-hmm.
And who would that be?
In undergrad, did I have a mentor? No.
Okay.
There were no Black professors on my campus. There were a few professors that were decent people, but it's a totally different type of situation now than it was back then, because now students can feel comfortable like you're doing now, coming to the professor's offices or getting to know them. But back then, you didn't know your professors. And one of the things that concerned me and many of the other Black students, well, the few of us that were there, is that we didn't really want our professors to know who we were, because we thought that they would discriminate against us if they knew our names.
Oh, wow.
So no, I didn't have any mentors and, you know, professors that I could just go to office hours. The professors could sometimes be really hostile toward Black students. They made it clear to us that we were not welcome there. They didn't think that Blacks were very intelligent. And so, no, there was no opportunity for me to ever talk to a professor or have a mentor. Let me see what that is.
Okay, so you're saying that you didn't necessarily have a mentor, but do you think that it would have been made any difference had you had that mentor in your undergraduate
years? It would have, especially if I could have had a program like this one, anything pertaining to African-American studies or minorities. There was nothing like that at my school. There were no Black professors. I think the only professor that I knew of who was a person of color was one Spanish professor that I had who was from Spain.
Mm-hmm.
But other than him, there were no minority professors. Even in engineering, when you think about the representation of Asian Americans in engineering, there were no Asian professors. All the professors in engineering were white males. I think during the entire time I was there, I had 3 white female professors. And even they were treated very badly, in particular one who was in English because she was really liberal, which was not at all popular at our school. She was treated very badly. Eventually she left. But yes, it would have definitely made a difference if I could have taken classes like the ones that I teach or had opportunities like the ones that we provide to students here, organizations like the ones that are here. We had nothing like that.
What year did you complete your undergraduate degree?
1987.
Okay. And then, so I know that it's kind of difficult to figure out what your plans are going to be after you graduate. So did you always know that you wanted to pursue your PhD, or what influenced going to from undergraduate to master's to PhD?
I had no idea that I would ever be a professor, that I would ever get a PhD. When I majored in history, it was because I wanted to go to law school. At first I thought about journalism, but I changed my mind. But I was going to go to law school because that was all I knew. And then by the time I was a senior, I started finding out more about different opportunities for graduate programs. And so I just decided to do that because I figured it would be something I would enjoy. But even then, when I was working on a master's, I didn't have a desire or an interest in being a professor. I had no idea what professors did. I was going to get a master's in political science and work for the government because I figured that's what the money was and that's what the jobs were. But then I found that I really liked doing research in my classes. So that was when I decided to look into getting a PhD, was when I started doing research and I started reading more about doctoral programs and opportunities for blacks with PhDs.
Okay. Kind of where I am now, so just like I'm hearing and I'm trying to absorb. After you received your PhD, what influenced your decision to come to the University of Florida? And was this the first institution you worked at or no?
No, it wasn't. After I received my PhD, I went to the University of Louisville. I had been in Knoxville, Tennessee for a few years, and it was I'd never got used to it because it was in East Tennessee. It was extremely racist, extremely isolating. Really, with all three of the schools that I attended, I was very isolated. At least when I was in my bachelor's program, at first there were only 25 black students, but then as I progressed to be a senior, there were more of us. And so, and then being in the city of Memphis and living at home, it was okay. But once I started working on a master's and a doctorate, there were no other black students. I was always the only black student in the entire program. And so it was really difficult at Tennessee because at least with my master's program, I was still in the city of Memphis because, you know, it was my hometown. But once I left Memphis and went to Knoxville and had the culture shock of being in this predominantly white environment, extremely racist environment, a campus that was also extremely racist. And notice I'm using the term racist. I'm not saying conservative because that's not what it was. It was just racist. They were just hateful. And so then when I graduated from the University of Tennessee, I was working at the University of Louisville. The reason I went to Louisville was because I wanted to live in the city again. Louisville kind of reminded me of Memphis. And it was in a Pan-African Studies department, which was the same as African-American Studies, which I really liked. And I got a chance to teach black students and work with black students, which is what I really wanted to do. So I worked there for 3 years. Then I went to the University of Missouri Columbia. And the reason I left Louisville was because it just wasn't making any money. And then there were some problems even in Pan-African Studies with the way that the department was being run, which I didn't like. But the main reason I left Louisville was because I just could not relate to the students. And it was ironic because most of the students were black, but they were totally different from students that I encounter now. They didn't do their work. Many of them didn't do their work because they had problems, but sometimes they just didn't do it. Some of them were very disrespectful, which really shocked me that black students would be so rude, but they were, and it reminded me a lot of high school, of the kind of things I dealt with in high school. So I left because I just couldn't relate to students there. And plus, I would teach a class and I'd say at least 50% or more of the students would fail it. No matter how I taught the class, no matter what I tried to do, they just couldn't do the work, or maybe they just wouldn't do the work. So I left Louisville and went to Missouri because it was a better school and it was more money. It was just much better quality of a job. At Missouri, I had a joint appointment in political science and black studies. And I taught there for technically 7 years, but the last 2 years I was on leave. So for one of the years I was on leave, I was at the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor. And then for the second year I was on leave, I was a visiting professor here. Mm-hmm. And then I've been here since then. That was in 2001.
Okay. So one thing that I've been hearing is you keep calling Knoxville racist.
Yeah.
Can you explain maybe using one experience or explain it a little bit further why you choose to use racist instead of conservative?
Oh, I can tell you about several experiences. One in particular, I'll never forget being in class one day in the constitutional law seminar. I was the only black student in practically every class except for, I think I had one class in which there was another black student. He was coming in as I was about to graduate. But I was always the only black student in the program and in the classes. And so we were having a discussion that day about affirmative action. So I knew it was going to be a rough day. And so the professor, well, it's a long story. I'm trying to think of a way to describe it. But our school paper had a series on race relations. So there was a white male student who was an undergrad who wrote four different articles about race at the University of Tennessee. And he mostly geared his discussion of race at black people. And he was saying that, you know, oh, all these black people are getting passed through, all these black people or this, that. And that's what the article was about. So I decided to write a response to one of them. And in the response, I talked about what it's like being a black student at UT and in Knoxville and the experiences that you have there and the things you have to deal with. And because one of the things that he wrote about was the fact that he felt that black people were always on the defensive. And I was like, well, you'd be on the defensive, too. And first of all, that's not true. But if it is, you'd be on the defensive, too, if you had to deal with the kind of things that we had to deal with. So one of the guys who was auditing a class that I was taking in con law was one of his friends. He was an undergrad who shouldn't even have been in the class. But he was auditing the class, and I later found out that he was auditing the class for free because he wanted to go to law school. And the professor knew him. He'd taken classes from this professor before, and the professor allowed him to audit the class simply as a way to help him prepare for law school. So we were in class, and we were talking about something that had nothing to do with race that day. And so he raised his hand, and he asked our professor before we started our class, has the NAACP ever had any white members? And our professor said, yes. As a matter of fact, they've had several. And he said, well, has the Ku Klux Klan ever had any black members? And our professor kind of looked really confused. He was like, you know, what are you talking about? He's like, I'd like to hope not. And he said, well, they have an affirmative action plan if anybody wants to join. And so that was directed at me because I had just written the article and it was published that day. And it was my response to what the guy had said about affirmative action. So that was. And the thing that disappointed me was that after we got into this argument and after it was over, I got the impression that my classmates were angry at me. Because they were like, well, the guy has a right to his opinion. And I'm like, well, he wasn't expressing an opinion. He was saying something just that was obviously a cheap shot at me. So that was one experience I had. And it was really difficult in that class because, you know, I was never one to really say very much in class. And one of the things that was interesting was that several of my classmates would always come up to me and ask me what I thought. Because I was always the only black person. They always wanted, you know how they want you to speak for your race. And they always wanted me to give my opinion. And then after that, I didn't feel comfortable saying anything at class because I'm like, after it was over, the professor went and talked to our department chairman. So I was at home a couple of days later, and I get a call from our department chairman, and he wants me to come to the office to talk to him. And I'm like, I didn't even know he knew who I was. So I went to his office a few days later, and he was telling me that, you know, you're not going to have any problems getting a job when you graduate, because what he was trying to say is, well, as a black woman, you're not going to have any problems getting any jobs, and these other kids, these white students are going to have trouble, and, you know, you need to really learn how to listen to what other people have to say. And I'm like, who are you to judge me? You weren't even there. And he just was saying all this crazy stuff to me, and that kind of made me feel really uncomfortable because I'm like, you know, when you're in class and you say something in class, you don't feel comfortable with the fact that your professor leaves class and tells someone something about you. You already are the only black student in the entire program, and you don't feel comfortable with the idea the professor has left class and told people these things about you, and now the department chairman is confronting you. And so I had that incident. And then just and almost on a weekly basis in Knoxville, white people used to act like they were scared of black people. Even women, even back then, I was really, really small. I was probably about your size back then. But, you know, and you'd be walking around in broad daylight, like on a day like today, and there'd be someone walking in front of you, and they would, like, jump because they weren't used to seeing black people. And you'd be like, you know, what are you jumping for? It's broad daylight. All these people are around. What do you think I want to do to you? And I remember once I was leaving an exercise class and I had to rush home and get changed and then come back on campus that night for class. So I guess I was walking really quickly and I was looking for my keys. And this girl was in front of me. Now, keep in mind, it was broad daylight, just like today. This girl was in front of me and she saw that I was walking toward her and I was doing like this, looking for my keys. But maybe she thought I was trying to get a weapon or something. But she saw me and then she kind of like ran and hid behind a tree until I walked past. And I was like, what in the world? She was like three times my size. And I'm like, I should be running from you. So, you know, I can go on and on. Sometimes like you pay for things. People wouldn't want to put money in your hand because they acted like you were dirty. They were always accusing black students of stealing. I remember even once I was in the bookstore and I had just bought my books. And I guess I wasn't paying attention to the girl behind the counter because she said that I had a course packet that wasn't ready and that I needed to come back the next day to pick it up. I thought when she sat the course packet down that she was sitting that course packet down for me. So I just happened to not even look, and when I was leaving, I picked it up and I went to leave because I paid for it. And then this guy said, "Hey, she's got my course packet. She got my course packet." And I was like, "Who?" And then he was like, "Hey, she got my," and I just kind of like threw it, and I was like, "What?" And then the girl said, "Oh, I told you yours is tomorrow." And I was like, "Oh, I'm sorry." And then he was really embarrassed that he had acted like that. And I said, "I'm sorry. I thought she said that one was mine." He's, "Oh, no problem." But it was like, he acted like I had like a rifle or something. So, I mean, you know, it's that type of stress that you had to deal with. Mm-hmm. People being rude to you. People would purposely try to close the door in your face when you'd be walking behind them. You know, here in Florida, I guess people are a little bit more polite and they'll hold the door for you. No, you learned how to not walk too closely behind white people because they were either scared of you or they were going to try and shut the door, slam the door in your face. So that used to happen a lot, too.
How was the atmosphere when you first started working here at UF?
I've never had any really major problems at UF. The atmosphere on campus has always been the same. It's just, we just are not going to ever stop having racial incidents on this campus. There are always going to be people on this campus and every other that have racist views about people of color, in particular about black people. And we were having problems back then, and there are still problems now. That's just the way it is. And it's not just UF, it's everywhere. So as far as the environment on campus, it was pretty much the same, the climate. Mm-hmm. But for me as a professor, students are very cautious about what they say in front of a black professor. So I noticed, like, even as a black student, students would just come out and say all kinds of things. But as a black professor, everybody's a liberal in my class. And I'm like, now I know y'all don't have these views in real life. And sometimes when I have taught, like, American government, you have students who will come out and will say things. But even then, students know how to be cautious and temper what they say because they have a black professor. Mm-hmm. So as far as the way I've been treated, I've never really been treated badly. It's not to say I haven't had bad experiences here or there, but it's never really been that big of a problem. But I have mentored a lot of students, and I have seen the things they have dealt with.
Okay, so on that note, mm-hmm. So you know about Black Thursday that happened in 1971. Mm-hmm. So something that we've been talking about in class has been the idea of desegregation versus integration and what those two nuances of those words mean. Mm-hmm. And do you think that from the experiences that the students had in 1971 to looking at the experiences that students are having now with the racial incidents and everything like that, do you think, you just said that you don't think that the campus environment has changed, right? Mm-mm. So do you know anything that can make it better, or what we as students or even black faculty and staff, how can we change the mm-hmm. environment so that it is better?
Well, in some ways you can't change people's minds because people are always going to have racist views, and that's just something we have to live with. But the one thing that has disappointed me over the years is when the perpetrators of these different types of racist acts have been found, they have not been punished. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, it's easy for the administration to talk about how outraged they are whenever someone writes some graffiti or someone does something to a student or something happens to it. Even like professors have had, African-American male professors in particular have had bad experiences here. But it's easy for you to talk about how, oh, it's horrible and how outraged you are that this is happening. But it doesn't mean a thing if you know the student who has done it or the person. In some cases, the people who perpetuate these acts are not students. You know the person who has done this, but yet you do nothing to try to punish them. So if anything, I think that a lot of these incidents would sort of, they would disappear if the students knew that if I get caught doing this, I'll get punished. But now it's like the university is sending a clear message to them that you're not going to get punished. And even with this latest incident, when someone kicked our sign down, the police came by and they treated us like, you know, well, what's this? This is no big deal. They didn't even want to write up a report. And then later, once it was in the media and the Alligator, the policeman then said, well, no, that's not true. And I'm like, yes, it was. You didn't want to even write a report because you just totally dismissed this whole incident with this sign situation. And even after this, what was the latest incident even before that that happened and President Fox didn't even issue a statement?
The Anderson Hall.
Yeah, the Anderson Hall. He didn't even issue a public statement. He responded to the email of the department chairman. But to me, if you are so outraged by racism, you should have at least issued some type of statement just to send some type of symbolic message that you don't support this, but he didn't. So how can we make it better? By making sure that the people who do these things are punished, and that's not something that I've ever seen happen here.
So one of the themes that I'm kind of connecting between your undergraduate career and what's happening here at UF is that all of these racist incidents are happening, and it's not necessarily something that the Black students and faculty and staff have to do something about. It's something more administrative.
Right.
So what kept you at your university, and how do you think that these racist incidents happening at UF, how do those affect Black retention rates here? Mm-hmm.
What kept me here at this university?
What kept you at an undergrad at your university?
The thing that kept me there at my university, at each of the ones that I attended, was that I knew that I was getting a good education, and I knew that I had opportunities that my parents didn't have. And I knew that I kind of had a dream for my future. I visualized myself living the way I live now, having the privileges of having an advanced degree and all that comes with that. So I didn't leave because I knew that this was what I needed. This was the place where I needed to be to accomplish my goal. And even if I went to a different school, it would be just as bad, if not worse. So that's what made me stay. So what was the second part?
So then the second part is, so we're experiencing these incidents that are happening in our undergraduate careers. Mm-hmm. What effect do you think that these racist incidents have on Black student retention here at UF?
I think they have a negative impact on Black student retention in the sense that on Black student recruitment and retention, in some cases, Black students don't want to come to UF because they know about these things and they already are going to feel isolated enough being in an environment where there are so few Black students, so they don't want to come to UF. They prefer to go to HBCUs like FAMU, where they not only will get a good education, but also they won't have to deal with the kind of stuff that they would deal with here. But it affects retention as well, because in the past month, I've talked to students who have thought about leaving. The week before, a PhD student was talking about just how she's treated in her department and how hostile it is and how unfairly she's being treated, and how much discrimination that she notices in some of the jokes that her classmates tell. And again, these are doctoral students, so it's not like you're dealing with people who are freshmen, fresh out of high school. These are people who are older. And even she was talking about transferring to Florida State, and I had to talk her out of it. So it affects, and I told her the same thing I'm telling you, which is that even if she was at Florida State, they've got the same problems we've got here. So since she's almost finished with her coursework, she'd be crazy to just walk away from it simply because of the environment, because she's going to have to deal with that type of thing all her life. And this was not a Black student, this was a Hispanic student, but you know, when you're a person of color, racism doesn't go away.
Mm-hmm. On that note, so you know about the Black Student Affairs Task Force.
Right.
So they have a lot of different recommendations on how to improve campus climate and make it more inclusive for Black students.
Mm-hmm.
Do you agree with any, like, is there any one specific point that you highly recommend?
Mm-hmm.
Or is there something else that wasn't included in that task force that you would think would help with Black student retention here?
Well, I didn't read the entire task force.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it's hard for me to respond to say if I agree with any particular point, but I did read a large part of it. But the one point that stood out to me was the need for more minority faculty and staff. And not only have we not gotten more minority faculty and staff, we've lost a lot of minority staff just even within the last month or two. So that's a big issue that the entire university is dealing with, just not being able to recruit and retain minority faculty and staff.
So on that note with minority faculty and staff goes back to the point I was asking you about
mm-hmm.
the mentors and
right.
everything like that. What impact do you think that those minority faculty and staff had on students, even have or had, so the people
mm-hmm.
who are still here and the people who have left?
I think just, what impact do minority faculty and staff have in general?
Yeah, on students.
Well, just having someone that you can talk to, someone that looks like you teaching a class makes a difference. It's something I wish I had, but I didn't. Just being able to go to, there are things that you probably take for granted. If you need a recommendation letter, you can just send me an email and say, oh, I'm applying for this internship, or I'm applying for this position, or I'm applying for admission to law school, whatever. Can you write me a letter by such and such date? And I'll probably say, okay, fine. That's not the case. That wasn't the case for me. I remember when I was applying to different grad programs, I was a good student in college, but I had professors who were telling me that they didn't have time to do it. And I'm not sure if they were just so busy, or if it was just they just didn't want to write a letter for me, or if they just didn't want to write a letter for a black student. But it makes a difference when you've got a person of color teaching a class, because I'm of the opinion, and I'm not trying to criticize anyone who's white who teaches courses that deal with race, because they do a good job. But it's not the same when you're hearing a white person talking about racism versus a black person talking about it, because the black person has lived it. The white person has read about it, has studied it, has maybe even observed it, but it's not the same thing. So it makes a difference having minority faculty and staff, someone that students can go to talk to if they have a problem that they don't feel comfortable talking to at a counseling center, or they don't feel comfortable talking to someone who's not black. So,
okay, we're almost at the end. So as a faculty member belonging to the African American Studies program, what benefit do you think that it has for black students?
The program?
Yes.
The mentoring, the fact that students know that they have professors who really do want to see them do well. The I think the opportunities that we expose them to, job opportunities, internship opportunities, even like with the situation when you went to Paris, opportunities like that. I would have loved to have had that opportunity when I was a student. But mostly just the fact that they're getting a lot of knowledge and a lot of skills from people who are very professional, very good at what they do, and who want to see them succeed.
And when exactly did the program start?
The Paris program was offered for the first time in 2007. Dr. Okay. Stephanie Evans taught the class twice in 2007, 2010. And then when she left and went to Atlanta, I then offered the class for the first time again in 2014.
Okay, and then when did the African American Studies program begin?
1969.
Okay, so it was already here before, well,
yeah, before 1969, you got here. And then they had their first director in 1970.
1970, okay. And then if you could name one experience that encompasses everything that you've done here at the University of Florida, could you name one?
One experience...
Or it could even be a feeling, one word that encompasses how it's been here your entire time.
How I've been treated the entire time?
That could be.
Well, it's really not one word that explains how I've been treated, because I think I've been treated well considering what some people deal with, but I haven't been treated great. I would say I'd say fulfilling, because despite the good and the bad, you had your good days and your bad days, but... Fulfilling, because I'm happy whenever I see students doing well when they graduate and you see their parents, and then years later when you see how what all they've accomplished, because I still keep in touch with quite a few of my students, and then you see that they've graduated from some school, or they've gotten some job, or they've, you know, gotten married, have families of their own. So I think that's fulfilling, knowing that I played a role in helping them get to the point where they are, helping them to achieve their goals.
Are there any questions that I did not ask that you wish I would have asked?
Let's see. I can't really think of any. I could tell you some other things about my childhood, but I think, you know, you did it's a really comprehensive interview.
Okay. And of course, if there's anything else that you would like for me to come back and everything like that, you can always, I can always shoot you an email or anything.
All right.